We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Today is Tuesday, August 13th, and yesterday was, I think, the best day that the Trump campaign has had overall since the debate with Joe Biden. And this is because Donald Trump has returned to the X platform, is pushing out some really good ads that are very targeted of just saying, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago under his presidency? He's pointing out the lack of border security. He's pointing out the extreme views of Kamala Harris. And last night, he also did an extended over 2 hour interview and just free conversation really between Elon Musk and himself. And that was streamed over X Spaces. And there were a few really good moments in that. Of course, you know, a lot of it for those of us who have watched or been to a bunch of the Trump rallies over the years, a lot of the content, you know, was about the same. But I think he said the messaging that he needed to say. And Elon was praising Trump quite a bit and ended up endorsing him and basically said that, you know, he's no real conservative. He describes himself more as a moderate. Trump kind of laughably said, you know, I always thought you were a little bit more liberal. But Elon said, you know, this is an important election to the future of our country, and actually endorsed Trump and encouraged even the independents and moderates and even the left to consider supporting Trump. So it really started out with Elon praising Trump for the moment that he displayed courage in this kind of memory hold assassination attempt. And this was Elon saying to Donald Trump, you can't fake bravery. This is cut one.
You can't fake bravery under such circumstances. The courage is instinctual or it is not. It's not a rehearsed action. And so I just want to say that I think a lot of people admire your courage under fire there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. The incredible thing, though, when you talk about the odds, you had to be exactly at that angle. And the bullet came whizzing by, hitting my ear. When you think of the odds of that, I say an act of God, it's a miracle that it happened. And I'm honored by it. I'm honored by it.
I think a lot of us think that that was an act of God, and God's sovereignty prevailed over that failed, thankfully failed, assassination attempt. So this is Elon saying that he is moderate and Donald Trump thanking him. This is cut three.
So this is to people out there who are in the moderate camp to say, I think you should support Donald Trump for president. And I think it's actually a very important junction in the road, and we're in deep trouble if it goes the other way.
Well, I want to thank you. And, you know, I actually always did think of you as somewhat left. I must say that. So it's even more of an honor to have your endorsement.
You know, I think Elon has seen kind of what the leftist worldview portends, particularly on free speech. And we're going to get to that in a moment. But this last clip, Trump also, of course, was talking about how Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have not done any media interviews. Meanwhile, J.D. Vance was out on all of the Sunday shows, I think acquitted himself very well, responding to all the questions, saying, you know, hey, we're willing to talk to journalists. We're not afraid of questions. And the American people need to hear from both sides. And Trump said, you know, Kamala Harris couldn't do an interview like this with Elon. So here is him kind of poking fun at that. Cut two.
Hey, and by the way, you think Biden could do this interview? Do you think that Kamala could do this interview? They would take a pass
on
you.
No, they could not.
So they don't need Elon screaming out questions. It's pretty sad that somebody that does this for a living can't answer a question or is afraid to do an interview.
And it's a really good point. It's going to be very interesting to see if there is more than the one debate that has been scheduled for September between Trump and Harris. No debate yet has been firmed up between Vance and Walz, but I do anticipate that will take place. But there is speculation whether Walz will continue. I don't think that he's going anywhere as much as the pressure on a lot of his lies over his past public service career have now been highlighted in the media. But this X interview got started about 40 minutes late. It was supposed to start at 8 p.m. Eastern last night. And it got started late, kind of reminiscent of the DeSantis campaign launch. And it was it's just due to spaces. There have been problems. But Elon posted at 8:18, there appears to be a massive DDoS attack or cyber attack on X, working on shutting it down. Worst case, we will proceed with a smaller number of live listeners and post the conversation later. Ultimately, there were about a million that streamed. X said that there were 16 million kind of in and out of the conversation. And I think it probably would have been likely higher than that, but for the frustration that a lot of people, myself included, right at 8 o'clock, not being able to get in. But let's talk about this cyber attack. So I want to welcome back on the show Jake Denton, who is the tech policy advisor for the Heritage Foundation. And Jake, has there been any confirmation of, you know, whether this was a denial of service attack on X last night?
No, it doesn't sound like we've received any confirmation or really any indication of who could have been behind the attack either. So we're still kind of in the dark on that front.
Well, and so what is this whole DDoS, or it's a distributed denial of service attack that Elon is alleging?
Yeah, so in the like most dumbed down version, because it's a very complex thing to explain, but it basically just takes up a lot of server capacity. And so when you're anticipating a surge like this, and then you couple it with a DDoS attack, it basically just takes up all of the support infrastructure that you previously put in place, really just handicapping your ability to provide the service. And so what was really clever about the timing on this, obviously you're anticipating a surge in users, and then you couple it with this, which basically just floods the servers. It's really hard for a company to weather a storm like that. So it is even a miracle we got the show at all.
That's really concerning. And I think for Elon to allege that, I wouldn't think that he would do that completely without evidence or, you know, what he's possibly observing or hearing from his people that are on X and trying to get this space launched. But if that is true, I mean, is there any way to sort of trace that to its origin? Would there be any sort of suspicion about who might have been behind that?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll bring in a forensic team to kind of audit the situation and see what happened. But, you know, I think the really important thing to take away from all of this is that every single day there are cyber attacks against our critical infrastructure, against our companies. And then you saw, you know, supposedly what our frontline support's supposed to be, a company like CrowdStrike completely fail at their job, take almost the entire planet offline for the better part of 2 days. And I think, you know, as we rocket ship towards Election Day, we all have to be very cognizant of the fact that we're walking on thin ice. You know, at any given moment, a cyber attack, whether it be a DDoS attack or something more nefarious, could take us offline, whether it be banking or just a social media site. So this is going to become more common until we take cybersecurity seriously.
And you've been talking about that for quite a long time and with the Heritage Foundation, urging Congress to take this more seriously and, you know, have some of these national security interests at the fore. Because when something like this happens, I mean, yes, it was merely inconvenient last night on face, but if it was a targeted DDoS attack and it was something that really would have amounted to election interference because you are preventing intentionally a candidate from speaking publicly on a platform that can reach a lot of millions of potential voters, then that gets into more concerns for not only free speech, but national security. And then you couple this with Elon also saying that the EU had asked him and basically tried to get him to sign this sort of secretive deal to basically shadow ban and censor conservative content and content that the EU didn't prefer. And of course, Elon highlighted this and was the whistleblower on that. But allegedly, there are other tech companies that did take that offer. And then you have the European Commission, and Thierry Breton is possibly how you pronounce this. It's T-H-I-E-R-R-Y, so very British. And, you know, sending this open letter yesterday to Elon, basically saying that there's a risk of amplification of potentially harmful content in the European Union in connection with events with major audience around the world. And you see that as well as what Britain is doing with saying, you know, we're going to censor misinformation, quote unquote, online. I mean, this is very 1984 stuff that that some of the world powers are trying to censor platforms that have an audience here in America. But this then ultimately will have global ramifications.
Yeah, you know, I think you set the stage there very well. When you consider how this all began, right, you look at the early days of social media, there was an obsession over what people were allowed to say. You know, the algorithm still generally worked in a fair manner. You could speak your mind and people would see it. And then, you know, slowly but surely the content moderation rolled out and governments got involved. And, you know, as you noted, these companies took deals with, you know, governance structures like the EU to really limit the reach of these people, you know, so you can still say these things, but no one will see it, or maybe they just ban you outright. But then you have a company like X, which, you know, has broken through, and suddenly the content moderation isn't the same as the rest of the pack. And now there's an obsession over really controlling the content again. And they don't like the idea that Elon isn't conforming to their standards. And so with a you know, monstrosity like the Digital Services Act, which is what the EU invoked yesterday in that open letter, they're basically just threatening legal action if Trump were to even mutter something that went against their harmful conduct standards. And so really it's an open-ended threat, just basically trying to discourage Musk from even hosting the space. And it's very interesting that it comes at this time. You know, the EU's been trying to kind of cozy up to a potential second Trump administration. And then now here they are trying to take a shot at him. So it is a very interesting timed attack, basically, from the EU.
Yeah, and all of this, I think Elon has been really at the forefront of not only pushing back against this, but bringing it to a public awareness and consciousness that this is happening. Because if he wasn't the nonconformist in the group, then people wouldn't even know that these secret deals were going on. And even the conservatives that have claimed for years, you know, we're being shadow banned, we don't have the reach that we used to, or certain posts don't. They were just told, oh, you're conspiracy theorists, and oh, it's just because people don't like your content, you know, too bad for you. But Elon is also taking down the brand safety group, GARM, which is the Global Alliance for Responsible Media, just through this a lawsuit with Rumble that was over antitrust. And it was less than a week after that was filed that now the GARM standards have basically been withdrawn from X. How important is that?
Well, it's huge. You know, as we all saw in the early days of Elon's transition into owning X, the advertisers what were ultimately going to make or break that transition. You know, they were all wielding their ad spends and trying to get him to basically uphold the old way of Twitter governance. And he refused, and they withdrew ad spends. And it was a very turbulent time. X, honestly, was a surprise they weathered that storm. It didn't seem like it was possible. But now, you know, you get out on the other side, and they're still around, and they're still trying to do this to other companies, and they're still really trying to do it to X. And so Musk launches this antitrust suit, and almost instantly they disband, and it basically is an admission of guilt when you look at it that way. But, you know, it's important to keep marching and trying to, you know, really solidify their position here and make sure another group like this doesn't emerge and cause more problems.
Yeah, really well said. I mean, and this is why the digital space and congressional attention to any of these issues is so important, because so much of the content we consume is online. I mean, I spend more time personally on X in terms of political content and the news stories that trend there and people's response and so forth than I do, you know, sitting down and listening to the curated content of whatever, you know, some mainstream media outlet prefers to talk about or thinks is important over the course of an hour. I mean, it's putting it back in the hands of the user to say, okay, I can scroll at my leisure, but the fact that it is actually actually curated content there. You know, is of course the whole discussion, but to see how these digital platforms are intentionally being targeted by governments that want to censor certain content under quote unquote misinformation is a really big deal. And that to me is also a key voting issue. If we're voting on the basis of truth, then you don't want censorship. We value the First Amendment here in America, and consider the difference between how Donald Trump is approaching this issue, his conversation with Elon Musk, versus what Kamala Harris and the Democrats and the Biden administration is doing. I mean, we've all seen the Twitter files that Elon brought out. But Jake Denton, always really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for stopping by yet again, and we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
AFA streaming has changed it. Hold on, you didn't let me finish. AFA streaming has changed its name. It's now AFA Stream. But even though the name has changed, everything else is still the same high-quality content you know and love. And if you're hearing about us for the first time, please take time to visit stream.afa.net and explore the variety of documentaries, courses, and features that are available. It's also a great way to keep up with some of your favorite AFR shows.
The Democrats are waffling, folks. I've never seen anything like it.
All of these things carry an aspect of intrinsic morality.
This is not just a Biden issue. He hasn't been calling the shots for some time.
Biden believes in pushing transgenderism, and Trump believes in protecting the girls.
You'll find lots of free content that you can watch online or in our apps. And you can open up much more when you become a Great Commission partner. Visit stream.afa.net today. Stream.afa.net.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. As we continue to highlight the contrasting worldview difference between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, and really this election, as we will continue to just hammer through November 5th, is that this is ultimately a worldview election, and you will either vote for truth, the biblical worldview, or for falsity and for lies. And one of the things that, of course, is very important to Christians is standing with Israel. And for all of the reasons that we've already discussed, but also in the wake of the October 7th terror attack last year, the framing of the media to say that Israel is the aggressor when they're now being attacked on about seven fronts is just such a lie. But Kamala Harris continues an arms embargo against Israel. So this coming from Just the News, Harris reportedly earlier agreed to meet with the Uncommitted National Movement, which has mobilized more than 100,000 voters who pledged to withhold their vote over Joe Biden's pro-Israel stance. So the group claimed that Harris expressed an openness to discussing with them an arms embargo against Israel. The claimed meeting drew the ire of Israel supporters, who accused Harris of kowtowing to the radical anti-Israel mob. So she is having to walk this line between what has been America's pro-Israel stance in terms of foreign policy and our nation's allies versus what the radical pro-terror, pro-Palestine base actually wants. And meanwhile, there are reports that Iran is poised to invade and attack Israel. So joining us now to discuss all this and more is Josh Hammer, the senior editor at large at Newsweek, and also the host of the incredibly popular, very well done, The Josh Hammer Show, which I am a frequent listener. So Josh, good morning. Thanks so much for joining.
Jenna, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, as always.
Yeah, so let's talk first about Kamala Harris and this really difficult situation that she finds herself in having to appease her radical pro-Palestine, pro-terror base, but not wanting to offend, frankly, the Jewish population that may vote Democrat. Where does she go with this?
Well, she's between a rock and a hard place, to be honest with you. I mean, we saw these tensions play out in many ways with her vice presidential running mate choice. I remain firmly of the opinion that the only reason that Josh Shapiro, the popular governor of the nation's most important battleground state, Pennsylvania, I remain firmly of the opinion that the only reason that he was passed over was due to the fact that he has a very Jewish-sounding name in Josh Shapiro, which is simply disgusting, for lack of a better term, and says all you need to know about how much the Democratic Party has transmogrified, has transformed for the worse since only 24 years ago, when someone with a similarly Jewish sounding last name, Joe Lieberman, was their running mate back then. They actually won the popular vote back in that election, as we all recall. So in any event, that whole vice presidential saga. And, you know, Jenna, if we recall just briefly the details as to how that all went down, the choice was unveiled in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in Josh Shapiro's own backyard. And the Friday before the announcement was made, the mayor of Philadelphia inadvertently posted to social media a video a few days early, it seemed, of a Harris Shapiro polished, souped-up video. So my own theory is that the ticket was ready to go. And at some point over that weekend, Kamala Harris pulled the 180 and kowtowed to the radical Dearborn, Michigan, Islamist, pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian, frankly, just pro-Iranian regime base, which is astounding because, you know, the key thing I think for the listeners to bear in mind here, this ultimately is not about Israel. You had the Columbia University, their so-called Students for Justice in Palestine chapter the other day, post a very, very, shall I say, interesting post to Instagram where they said, quote, "We are Westerners who advocate the destruction of Western civilization." These are not people who are ultimately happy to stop at Israel. It's not about that. As has been for the Jews and the Jewish people and the Jewish state all throughout human history, this is just a scapegoat, a means to a much broader project of destroying the West, of destroying the Judeo-Christian heritage, of destroying all that Western civilization was, is, and God willing will continue to be for a very long time. So the fact that one of America's two major political parties seems to be entirely just capitulating to the forces that don't want to not merely wish the Jewish people harm, but as I just said, want to actually really destroy this entire civilization, that really is quite egregious.
And I think you're absolutely spot on this. And this is why we have to continue to look at the contrasting worldviews, because it's not just that Kamala Harris has this view on Israel and she has this view on abortion and she has this view on queer theory and she has that view on something else. It is all actually cohesive intentionally, as you exactly pointed out and rightly described, to destroy Western civilization. And that's the intent of the radical leftist communists. I mean, they want to usher in a communist regime that's built on Marxism. They don't want to have the Judeo-Christian worldview, freedom and prosperity and self-government, to be the American experience. They want to transform America into their preferred leftist utopia. So if you're right, Josh, and I'm sure that you are, that Kamala Harris and Josh Shapiro were the ticket until she pulled this 180, where is Tim Walz on Israel? What do we know about that?
Well, look, I think Tim Walz is something of a chameleon, Jenna. I mean, Tim Walz was elected to Congress from a center-to-center-right district, a Republican-leaning district in Minnesota. And, you know, back when he was there, you know, he spouted all of the platitudes that you would expect someone in that district to spout, not just on the Israel issue, but also on the Second Amendment. I think he was even endorsed by the NRA at some point in the congressional cycle back then. So he said all the things when it comes to Israel, gun rights, law and order, immigration. You know, he said all the things that a Democrat running in a red district had to say back then. But ever since he became governor of Minnesota, he has taken it in a truly radical direction. And Minnesota has a decent-sized Jewish population. There have actually been numerous state-level Jews who have been elected to office in Minnesota. Norm Coleman, the U.S. senator, comes to mind as just one. They've actually had a number over the decades. So, I mean, you can't just totally, you know, stick a proverbial middle finger to the Jews and all the Christians who support Israel. So, you know, he has to toe a line there. But Minneapolis, much like Dearborn, Michigan, also has a very large and increasingly radicalized Muslim population. Minneapolis is the home not just of George Floyd, we will recall, but also of Ilhan Omar. I mean, that is where the nation's largest Somali immigrant community is. And as such, You know, I saw Gabe Kaminsky, who's an investigative reporter with the Washington Examiner and a very good investigative reporter at that. I saw that he did a deep investigative dive a few days ago where he basically uncovered that Tim Walz has had this one Muslim cleric, this one imam speak, who in the aftermath of October 7th has repeatedly praised Hamas's vicious terrorist attack. I think he's even praised Hitler, this imam that Tim Walz has honored at the state capitol. So Tim Walz has a lot of his own questions to ask. And perhaps the single most egregious thing that Tim Walz has ever said or done when it comes to the Jews more generally, from what I can tell, is that he has said that it is his opinion that the Holocaust should not be treated as a unique historical event, but rather should be taught in schools within the broader context of other genocides that have been perpetrated in human history. And as someone myself who keeps on my desk right near my office, or I guess in my office right near my computer, I keep on my desk at all times a rock that a rabbi gave me years ago that he personally smuggled out of the crematorium of Auschwitz. And then I have a rock next to that that I personally took from Treblinka, the second deadliest death camp from the Nazis. You know, from my perspective, with all that, I look at that from Tim Walz, and, you know, I just say that you are a disgusting pig and I want nothing to do with you.
I think that's fair. And that type of analysis, I mean, we can't overstate how much these people hate Israel. They hate truth, and they hate everything that the Judeo-Christian worldview stands for. And, you know, and with all of this, Josh, you're in the middle of writing a book about all of this. You know, what is that, and when does that come out?
Yeah, so the book is called Israel and Civilization, the Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. So we still have a little bit of a ways to go before the release date. Full disclosure, I'm actually still putting the finishing touches on the manuscript right now. I have a little bit of a ways to go there. But right now our release date is March 18th, 2025. It actually just for the very first time went online available for pre-order on Amazon and some other websites this past week. And they'll probably do a more full-scale promotional push in the weeks or month or so ahead. So really, really excited for that. The book is partially about the modern state of Israel, certainly, and U.S.-Israel relations and foreign policy and all that, but it's also much deeper. It really does kind of touch on a lot of the themes that you and I have just touched on here in the past 10 minutes or so, namely that, you know, what we today call Western civilization, which has been developed, nourished, and will only continue to exist due to the people of the book, Jews and Christians alike. You know, the notion that you can ever have a Western civilization without the original monotheistic people, without the original people who received the word of God from God himself in Mount Sinai, a.k.a. the ancient Israelites and now the modern Jewish nation. I mean, the idea that any of this will exist without the Jews is positively ludicrous. It is an insane proposition. Wise people throughout history have been well aware of that. And, you know, as scripture very clearly says, you know, he who blesses the children of Israel shall be blessed. And then the corollary in turn is true as well. He who punishes shall be punished. And, you know, if there is one thing that at a tense moment like this that I take solace in, it is the fact that history has very much borne out those words, and that those who have punished the Jews typically have been punished. The Nazis obviously just being one particularly prominent example over the past century or so, but there are, you know, countless other examples throughout history. But in any event, the book's going to go through all this. It's going to go through how Western civilization first began with God's revelation to Moses and the Israelites at Mount Sinai. We'll talk about how the Torah, the Bible, how it imbued all that, essentially the English common law tradition and all that we call Western morality and ethics and law today. It's really going to try and do a lot in a fairly short timetable. So it's an exciting project. It's an ambitious project, but I know that I'm very excited for it. There's going to be one whole chapter on the Abraham Accords, these wonderful peace agreements that Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu were able to achieve together when they were in office between Israel and the UAE, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan. And I'm going to talk a lot about how the exact foreign policy doctrine those two men devised got us there. So it's going to cover a lot of terrain, Jenna, but I know the listeners of this program will be very excited to get it, at least I hope.
Yes, well, I'm one that is really excited to read this because we have to understand that history and, you know, not think that Western civilization somehow, you know, began with the founding of America, but, you know, but understand the great heritage that our founders inherited from the Western tradition and ultimately from God himself, because there is truth and then there are all of the other theories that are completely false. And so you have that contrast, and genuine freedom and liberty cannot be attained without understanding truth and the truth that was and has been revealed by God himself and in the Word of God. And this is why, Josh, I think that there is such a separation, unfortunately, in this nation especially, between learning all of that history and learning theology, for example, with a lot of the people that are engaged in civics, public office, even lawyers, you know, like you. And you know, there are, for a lot of people who are engaged in all of those vocations, if they don't study the rest of it and the why, then we get so off track into all of these other notions of, you know, what doctrines can originate with the Supreme Court. Well, the Supreme Court isn't impervious to falsity if they're not grounded in the Western tradition. I mean, this is why our Supreme Court has all of the lawgivers, starting with Moses, that you mentioned, actually on the crest around our Supreme Court. And so this absolutely is important for the next generation to understand.
100%. And, you know, I'm really happy that you mentioned how Moses is right there in the freeze, I guess you would say, the moldings around the U.S. Supreme Court building. I actually referenced that just last month. I was speaking at the National Conservatism Conference in Washington, D.C., and my speech was calling for a Jewish-Christian alliance against so-called separation of church and state in America. And, you know, full disclosure, I actually incorporate that speech into the final chapter of my book manuscript, which is very much on this theme of a broader Jewish-Christian alliance to save the West. But I actually mentioned that in my speech, and it's also in the final chapter of my book, which is the fact that literally right there in the U.S. Supreme Court, that they have right there in the molding Moses descending from Mount Sinai holding the stone tablets with the Ten Commandments. And, you know, that makes it all the more ludicrous that the Supreme Court to this day, you know, considers the mounting of the Ten Commandments in a town square or in a classroom of possibly dubious constitutional nature. I mean, it's like, guys, you have it literally in your own courtroom. I mean, talk about possible hypocrisy here. I mean, it's constitutional for you to have it there, but not for the people to have in the classrooms. It's utterly fantastically ludicrous. But that very much actually is the final chapter of my book. It's the Jewish-Christian Alliance to Save the West. I basically say that Jews need the Christians and the Christians need the Jews. If we're going to save this thing from the forces of wokeism, Islamism, and global neoliberalism, those are basically the three threats that I identify. If we're going to save the West from those three different but in many ways related threats, then Jews and Christians desperately need each other. And we can only save this if we're all in it together, I say.
Well said, and really looking forward to the book. Josh Hammer, appreciate your time as always, and we will be right back with more to talk about world views when we come back right here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for an entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we are seeing the contrast in not just this election, but global events that are pointing more and more toward, where do you stand? Do you stand with truth or do you stand for a lie? Because there is only truth and non-truth. There is only truth or a perversion of truth. And that ultimately depends on whether you accept who the God of the Bible is and who do we say that Jesus Christ himself is. And so this isn't just about Western civilization in the sense that, oh, we like our traditions and we like our ability to, you know, have whatever we believe the blessings of liberty are and that we, the people, are the sovereign in this nation and I want to be the God of my own little kingdom, you know, of course, little g, and direct my life in the way that I think it should go. Ultimately, Western civilization, as Josh Hammer rightly described it, is predicated on the truth of the Word of God. And that is why this matters. It's not just that we like America for all of our rich history and experiences. It's that we like and are advocating for the fact that we are founded on truth. The Declaration of Independence specifically recognizes that truth is self-evident and that it is God, our Creator, that endowed us with our rights. It describes that that all human beings are made in His image. And as such, we have these rights that are given by Him that cannot be separated from us because of intrinsically who we are as human beings made in His image. And that is the truth that we are advocating for. That is why worldview matters. And if you look at what is going on in culture today, not just here in America, but globally. I mean, if you look, like we talked about on yesterday's program with Steve Dace and then the segment following, you know, talking about how at the Olympics, in the opening and closing ceremonies, you just had queer theory so at the fore, even in the boxing tournament, you know, you have now this whole discussion over whether gender is this concept that we can't necessarily pin down, and there's no test that actually describes from a scientific perspective whether you're male and female. I mean, that is negating one of the first essential truths in Genesis, that God created male and female. It's not a gender that was assigned by birth or just observed by a doctor that you can manipulate or that you can reinvent in your own image. It is specifically that God created. And that is a great deception. Right now, across the globe, is queer theory. And as we have discussed on this program repeatedly, queer theory is this whole spectrum of gender where you can't actually pin down what is male and female or whether you are a male or a female. It just depends on how you feel. It depends on how you present yourself, and it could change. You know, I might identify as a woman today, but hey, around 2 p.m. if I decide I'm having some male tendencies, I might do that. Or you know, 17 or 47 or 75 other genders that New York wants to put in place. I mean, all of this is so that we can't actually pin down our identity in Christ. Because if we don't have specific contours and parameters over a definition of what a thing concretely physically is, then we lose all meaning to the definition of that person or that object. I mean, if you think about, like, I'm sitting here with my coffee mug, and it's hazelnut coffee. It's very amazing, by the way. The coffee cup that I have has specific defined contours. There is coffee cup and then there is not coffee cup around it. And there are specific walls. It allows it to fill its function and purpose. I can identify it as a coffee cup. I can pour liquid into it and it won't spill because there are contours. And yet if those parameters were not concretely defined, then I wouldn't know what is coffee cup and what is not coffee cup. And so we understand from a rational, logical perspective, the definitions and contours of reality. But the reason that the left is going so far to blur all of these lines about anthropology, about the study of man and what a human being is, specifically our gender, our identity, is so that they can break down any sort of contours of rationality of what a human being is, which is that we are made in God's image. And this is, I believe, a great deception that has been perpetuated across the globe, and more people in Western civilization are buying into this. And this is just going into and feeding into the full scope of outright paganism and occult worship, because if you cease to define a human being rationally as a person with inherent dignity and worth from the moment of conception all the way till natural death, then if you start blurring any of these lines and these contours, then you can get to things like physician-assisted suicide, completed life bills, and all of those things on the back end of life. But then you also get to these arbitrary cutoff points of abortion regulation. And it goes from, you know, just a mere blob of cells to a person magically in an instant when either a woman decides she wants the child and it's wanted, which is a completely arbitrary subjective view, or the moment of birth. And so then we can manipulate those lines if we don't have a concrete definition of what a human being is and the value that is intrinsically associated that cannot be separated. And that's what we're fighting for. We are fighting for what our founders understood and recognized at the beginning of America's existence, which is that truth is self-evident. We cannot manipulate truth. So if we are standing for truth, and the reason that I say vote your values and your singular value, we should be one issue voters, and that issue is truth. Everything else that we stand for as Christians, and at first and foremost, and then as conservatives conserving that worldview built on truth, will naturally, logically, rationally outflow from that one issue. And that's where we have to put our civic responsibility and our duty of engaging in our civil society and our truth in community, which is our definition of politics. And so and there have been so many lies that have been perpetuated across human history. The devil doesn't care which lie you believe as long as you don't believe the truth. So I got a question, though, after, and I got a ton of response, actually, from listeners, and I'm so appreciative of hearing from listeners when, you know, you really loved a program or you were encouraged by it, or, you know, as Tim always says, the positive, encouraging, K-love kinds of emails. But I always appreciate hearing from you, and so, you know, there was a lot of response to the worldview discussion yesterday, but then I got this question from a listener named Heidi, who said, say hi to Todd and Copper. They say hi back. We always appreciate that, too. But she says this, thank you so much for your show this morning, especially the segment with Steve Dace and discussing biblical worldview. I see all the pieces of the eschatological timetable being set in place and am stunned at the lack of concern, or maybe even worse, they know what's going on and are in support of it. My question for you is, remember in the Bible, it says that, quote, he will send a strong delusion over them that they may believe the lie. Do you think that this is what is happening to these people now, or is it something that happens during the tribulation? And this is a great question. And actually, in advance of the show yesterday, I was talking to my mom, who a lot of you who are listening are actually in our theology class Monday nights. And I was telling her on Sunday, you know, what I was going to be talking about the next morning. And we were talking about this very segment of scripture, which is in 2 Thessalonians 2. So we talked yesterday about 1 Thessalonians and Paul's praise of the church at Thessalonica for being filled with faith and action and virtue, faith that then begets love, which then ultimately results in hope that we have. And we can be encouraged as Christians that no matter what happens to America or our culture or whatever, we can stand firm in the hope of the truth of God, because we know ultimately the end of the story. And now that doesn't mean that we just abandon our civic duty, our moral obligations, any of that. But we know that eventually and ultimately the end of all things will happen. And so is that setting the stage now? I mean, we do know that we are in the end times as a dispensation. And I'm, as many of you know, I am a pre-tribulation dispensationalist in terms of my eschatology. So I believe that that it's very clear in the Bible that that there is the Old Testament law and the priesthood, and then that was fulfilled in the law through the coming of Jesus Christ and through the work, the finished work on the cross. Now the Gentiles were grafted in. The church did not replace Old Testament Israel, but we are grafted in, and we are now in the New Testament age of recognizing the Messiah has come rather than trusting that he would come, which is the Old Testament. And so Christ fulfilled the law, which was a foreshadowing of his coming. And then Christ now has come, and we must believe that Christ is Lord and accept salvation through the finished work on the cross. And so we've been living in the end times. And when Jesus ascended, and when he said, I will return, we are looking forward to that literal second coming. And there are notes not only in Old Testament prophecy that foreshadow the second coming of Christ, but also in the New Testament. And Paul talks about that through all of the epistles. And so in 2 Thessalonians, we have now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, that's the second coming, and our gathering together to him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. So this is a future event. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. The man of sin is revealed. That's talking about the Antichrist, the lawless one, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped. So he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So this is the great falling away. This is the Antichrist that will come and set up the one world government, all the things that are predicted in the book of Revelation, which has not yet happened. And then verse 5, do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? And now you know what is restraining, that he, the Antichrist, may be revealed in his own time. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way. And then the lawless one, the Antichrist, will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of truth that they might be saved. So these are people who have rejected the truth. Then it goes on to say, and for this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie. What is the lie? That this other, the Antichrist, is God. They will believe that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. So the great lie, the son of perdition, is that he'll enter into the world at a time at the beginning of the end of all things. And so this is a foreshadowing. There is great deception in the world, but specifically the lie that is forecast in 2 Thessalonians 2, and you should read the entire context of this, is talking about the things to come. And whether we're on the precipice of the end of all things, God in the fullness of time and in his sovereign time knows. Maybe this is the beginning of the great lie, but we know that there are lies, and that's why we have to stand on truth. There is great deception in the world, but this specific strong delusion, this lie, will come after the Antichrist has been revealed and after the Christians have already been raptured out to and the second coming of Christ to bring the saints home with him. So another great resource from John MacArthur is at gracetogty.org, The Man Who Would Be Christ. It's a 6-part series. I'd really encourage you, if you want to listen to this, go and listen to that. You can always reach me and my team, jenna@afr.net. Thanks so much for the question, Heidi.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.